Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Welcome back to G&D on the Fan. The Commanders are looking to draft a generational quarterback soon. Don't forget to think about your next generation. As the exclusive sponsor of our show, the law firm of Condori and Murad, they can guide you and your family in the right direction by helping you draft your will, set up a revocable trust, or create a healthcare power of attorney. Schedule a free consultation with their estate planning attorneys over at kmlawyers.com. Be sure to tell them G&D sent you. If you want a discount, you got to mention the show. That's kmlawyers.com. Hung out with those guys at the Caps game at Capital One Arena for a big win against Tampa on Saturday night. I had a good time. They're really good dudes. Local guys, went to Lake Braddock and George Mason University. So if you've got any needs in those fields, make sure to look them up. But speaking of the Caps, let's kick off our blitz. Nats, Commanders coming up. We start on the ice. Ben Raby, Capitals Radio Network. Ben, I'm going to tee you up and then sit it back here because there's a lot of ground to cover. But give us some playoff permutations tonight as the Caps and the NHL crank up.
Well, the easiest scenario to keep in mind from a Capitals perspective, they may take it one game at a time, but we're going to look at the two games they have left. Simplest scenario for the Capitals. Tonight, Boston, tomorrow, Philly, win them both. They're playoff bound for the 15th time in 17 years. Other things of note tonight, the Red Wings out of town are playing the Canadiens. A Red Wings regulation loss eliminates them from the equation. And likewise, a Penguins regulation loss tonight against Nashville would eliminate them from the equation. So a little bit of scoreboard watching, but from the cap side of things, they take care of business themselves, two wins in two games, and they will be playoff bound.
Standing in their way, a really good Boston team that's also fighting for a division. So they need this game. I would love it if they didn't, and we're just resting everybody, and like the three of us were suiting up for them tonight. But this is a formidable club here, Ben.
It is a formidable club, and that being said, for whatever stock you could put in this, the two prior meetings the Capitals had with Boston, one in February and just a few weeks ago in late March at Capital One Arena, Caps have actually played them fairly well. They had a shutout win in Boston right out of the All-Star break, and here a few weeks ago, they eventually lost in a shootout against Boston, but the team was pretty pleased with how they handled themselves against, yes, one of the stronger teams, a legitimate Stanley Cup contender, and a Bruins team, which, yes, vying for top spot in the Atlantic Division. So they have quite a bit at stake themselves tonight. But that being said, a team, the Capitals, for what it's worth, in two games so far this year, have gone toe-to-toe with them in each of those matchups.
Capitals are in trouble defensively. Rasmus Sandin's been hurt, and now Nick Jensen, who was stretchered off the ice on Saturday, will not be available clearly in either of the final two regular season games. Nope. I'd imagine it could be tough for him to come back even early in the playoffs, but I shouldn't look ahead. So what's the lay of the land on the blue line then?
Yeah, it's pretty thin. I mean, you look at the depth chart, they'll lean heavily on Farivari and John Carlson, as usual for Carlson. You know, he'll log big minutes, could potentially play upwards of 30 minutes here tonight against Boston. And keep in mind, the front end of back-to-backs, you worry about tomorrow when tomorrow comes, but I would imagine very busy nights at the office for Carlson and Farivari. And then you look lower down the depth charts, Alexander Alexeyev has shown himself very well over the past few weeks. He was a healthy scratch for weeks at a time going back to earlier in the season. He has shown himself well over the past few weeks. He'll be asked to, you know, handle a bigger load than normal as well. You've got Dylan McIlrath recalled from AHL Hershey, just north of 70 games of NHL experience, almost a decade's worth of pro experience. But again, a guy playing just his second NHL game this year, Dylan McIlrath. He's a big boy, 6'5", 240, could play that physical brand. But, you know, again, you know, being asked, thrown into the fire to an extent here. And ditto for Vinny Iorio. Again, we're talking lower down the depth chart, not a household name. A prospect in the system, but he'll be playing his ninth career game tonight, and they're going to need these guys to step up. They've called on young guys and call-ups all year to step up and play maybe above their weight class and perhaps fitting with two games to go, you know, thin on the back end. But again, they're going to be turning to some call-ups and young guys to, again, take advantage of the opportunity with so much at stake here with two games to go.
Who's going to start and goal for these final two games?
Well, Charlie Lindgren tonight and tomorrow TBD. Spencer Carberry stopped short of naming a starter for tomorrow. You know, he laughed it off, said, hey, one game at a time, let's get through tonight. But that suggests to me, you know, you could be calling on Charlie Lindgren to play the final two games. He's led you, he's gotten you to this point. Maybe unorthodox to play 2-2, but at this stage, you got to have him. He's been your rock for so many weeks here. So we'll see tomorrow when it comes, but wouldn't be surprised if that's how it plays out.
I mean, what level of concern do you have that he just hits a wall at some point? I mean, he's never been truly a starter before, let alone a starter playing an era or two ago, like amount of games. We're talking about, I haven't looked it up today, but at one point it was like 26 out of 27 games or something that he'd played in as of a few games ago. It's crazy what we're seeing.
It's funny you mentioned that, Grant. I was thinking just before this call, I too have lost count. I had that stat on the ready for all these hits over the – I've lost count. It's a lot. He's played a lot over, quite a few weeks here, quite a few months. The exact number, I've lost track myself. Regarding your question, though, do we wonder, has he hit a wall, et cetera, et cetera? You go by the most recent game. He was sharp against Tampa Bay on Saturday. He acknowledged, telling colleague Tom Galitti from NHL.com this morning that he actually felt a little under the weather last week. He wasn't conceding that he's physically worn down from the wear and tear of the schedule, just, you know, felt under the weather. Said he feels good and he's raring to go and he's good to go tonight. So we'll put the trust in Charlie, as the Capitals have for, a good chunk of the second half of the season here.
Benjamin, thank you as always, buddy. Enjoy tonight. We'll be listening.
All right, thank you, fellas.
See you, my friend. Hit that national sounder, Darius. Our pal Britt Jarolli covers baseball for The Athletic. Britt, haven't had a chance to talk to you since, but how important, how big a deal was it? And maybe walk us through what you know about the Nationals, Steven Strasburg and company, kind of coming to an accord here and ending the potential black cloud hanging over the org.
Yeah, I think it's such a big deal because, as you guys know, I mean, it really was that black cloud. It felt like here's a guy who, you know, has been painted all over the stadium, who really added some legitimacy to this organization from the moment he was drafted. And really, you watch that star ascend so quickly. He was the World Series MVP in 2019. It just felt like this is a guy that you want around, that you want to come back to reunions, that you want to have a good relationship with. And I think having these two parties come to an agreement, having the terms be amicable, I was told to be a press conference later this summer to make it official. I think you can now start to look at, okay, does he join the Ring of Fire? And, you know, where does he fit among the Nationals greats? And, you know, all of these really positive things that we can talk about, we can now talk about, versus before when it was like, okay, why are they trying to fight over money when it comes to him? You know, it just, I think, lets us all breathe easier. It's over. It's done with. We all know that Steven Strasburg could not pitch again. I think this is really nice to have this wrapped up for the organization.
Britt, 6-9 through 15 games, and that's with a couple that got away late. Yesterday, I thought Davey made a couple of decisions I'd like to have back, and then they had a blown ninth-inning lead with Finnegan, which is going to happen from time to time. So it could pretty easily be 8-7 through 15, which would look a lot better. But how should we feel about the first few weeks here?
Yeah, I mean, you said it. I I think he should feel pretty good. I mean, I know it's really early, and, you know, we're going to be saying that for quite some time until we at least get past that Memorial Day stretch. But, you know, I think that there's a lot of encouraging things with this team to look at and to look forward. And, you know, I think there are going to be series like Oakland where you feel like, oh, that got away, right? Like, they should have won that series. But then you look at it, and, you know, some of these games that they've played and teams that they've played, that they've really kind of shown up. And I think if you're a Nationals fan, all you want is for these young guys to show that they're progressing and they're moving forward, and you're seeing that. And I think what's even more encouraging if you're a Nationals fan is you are seeing some of these guys who, you know, for so long all we talked about was they don't have homegrown talent. And now for the first time you're seeing guys like the guy who's pitching tonight who are coming up through the national system. They didn't trade for him. And that to me is what's going to enable them to take the next step. Having these guys who they didn't just trade for, who they developed and are growing, they're going to be a huge part of this rebuild too. So I think it's really kind of gone as well as you can expect.
So, Britt, speaking of young guys, James Wood is pretty much too good for AAA. He's hitting like 994, numbers approximate, over his last couple of games. He looks like a big leaguer. But Grant and I were talking last week about this, and I'm going to do everything I possibly can if I'm the Nationals to make sure I don't lose that extra year of eligibility to have him under team control at the expense of a couple of weeks for a team that's not going anywhere. Orioles calling up Jackson Holliday, maybe a different story, a team that's got, you know, World Series aspirations. That's not where the Nats are. Just big picture, I wonder where we are in terms of that manipulation of service time and young players and big leaguers and the like. Would love your thoughts there.
Well, see, the Nationals have never done that. If you talk to Mike Grisso, he's very adamant in that when they feel like a guy's ready, they call him up. They did it to Harper. They did it to Juan Soto. What's so interesting about James Wood to me is when they went to make that trade with the Padres, I was told that numerous Padres officials said, we can't part with James Wood. Like, that was, you know, so many people were like, I don't care who we trade away, you know, to get Soto, we can't part with James Wood. And he was thought of as kind of a difference maker by a lot of people in that organization. And sure enough, he is. I mean, they've gotten some other guys as well, but he seems to be the one guy that you're like, whoa, this guy's going to be a star. So I don't think they're going to hold him back necessarily, even if they're not going to win, because there are those things in place where he places, you know, in the rookie of the year voting. There are some advantages to that as well. And again, like I said, Mike Rizzo has been so adamant about not playing those games that I don't think that's going to be a factor. But certainly, I think he's progressed faster than people would have expected, even though, like I said, a lot of people saw him as kind of a shooting star in San Diego.
Britt, thank you. Good catching up. Enjoy baseball this evening. We appreciate you.
All right, thanks, guys. Good to chat with you.
You got it. You Let's too. Keep the blitz moving, talk a little football. Nick Ackridge of PFF joins us now. Nick, a lot of smoke on Jaden Daniels to Washington, number two. Are you buying it?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough to ignore whenever Schefter starts throwing out some names like that. But, you know, we saw this with Adam Peters when he was with the 49ers. There was a lot of Mac Jones smoke before they eventually took Trey Lance. So I'm not 100% sold on it. That's probably just me, you know, being more of a Drake May fan and saying that. But, yeah, it's tough to kind of ignore that.
Excuse me, I should probably clear my throat before I talk. What fits them the best in terms of stylistically, Nick? Like, which quarterback do you see fitting Kingsbury, Brian Johnson, et cetera, for the long haul?
Yeah, I think both Drake May and Jaden Daniels really kind of fit with their what they do on offense and Cliff Kingsbury's style of offense. I know he doesn't really like to call it an air raid, but it is an air raid style of offense, and both of them have come from backgrounds in that style of offense, so they're very familiar with that. I didn't really see the J.J. McCarthy fit as much. You know, he played in a lot of under center heavy play action stuff, which, you know, Cliff didn't do a ton with Arizona. So I definitely see, you know, Drake May and Jaden Daniels as more of a fit.
You mentioned being a Drake May guy a couple answers ago. I mean, how far back does your intrigue in him go, and why are you kind of backing him, so to speak, for the number two pick?
Yeah, it's always tough when you kind of try to pick one, and, you know, you have fans of each one's coming at you. But, yeah, I've kind of been a Drake May fan ever since I really kind of dove into his tape and really watched him and studied him. I think the potential that he has is a top 10 quarterback. I think, you know, his arm talent, his pocket presence, his athleticism, all of that, I think, is very, very good. And it's something that you can really bet on to see him as a future franchise quarterback. And that's not to say for me that I don't like Jaden Daniels. I still have a top 10 grade on Jaden Daniels. I think both of them are outstanding prospects. But for me, I'm just betting more on the high upside potential in Drake May.
Nick, speaking of betting, you got to walk to the betting window today. Do you bet that the Washington Local 53 trade back into the first round to select somebody, be it a tackle, receiver, or otherwise?
Yeah, that's tough. I think that really is 50-50, but I would lean no. I would lean that they would stay put. Obviously, that can change if they see a huge run on tackles kind of late in that first round. I would not be shocked if they go up and get it. But, you know, it's always kind of tough trading up into the first round to, you know, you're essentially saying this one player is worth two to three, basically. And that's tough to kind of, you know, swallow if it's not a quarterback. But if they like a guy and they think they can go get him and they don't think it costs too much, then by all means, go get him. But if they think they can sit back and, you know, take someone that might fall there to the early second, then I would much rather prefer that.
Speaking of trades, how would you feel about giving up picks to go get a veteran wide receiver, whether that's Brandon Ayuk or somebody else?
I wouldn't mind it just because, you know, you want to give your rookie quarterback as many options as you could possibly have. I think surrounding him with those type of weapons is something that, you know, good teams do, and it just helps a young quarterback. You know, when you have that young quarterback, you can manage to spend this type of money on these players because, again, he's on that rookie deal. You know, I'd like to see maybe that rookie quarterback kind of prove it first before you go spend all that money. But, you know, it's always better to kind of give him more weapons and more help than not.
Should they be doing things in the draft defensively? I'm of the mind that I want to make sure, to your point, I want to make the bed, build the nest, whatever analogy you want to use, for my rookie quarterback. I only care about that. But they could improve on defense. I sort of don't care about that year one. Where are you at on that?
Yeah, no, I think this roster, and we kind of saw it in free agency, I think this roster needed a lot of overhaul, a lot of work. And for me, I don't think any position should be off the board. Maybe D-tackle when you have Payne and Allen there. But I think every position should be at play, and I think you should really kind of stick to, you know, best player available, whether that's offense or defense. You know, they could use depth pretty much everywhere. We know what kind of major holes we have right now, but there's no problem going best player available and just honestly just drafting good players. As easy as that sounds, sometimes teams don't do it. Just draft a good player. You know, maybe that's not something that is a pressing need right now, but you're kind of in a position where you are building a team up from scratch, basically.
Nick, thanks. We appreciate you, man.
Yep. You guys have a good one.
You too.
You too. Check out Nick Akridge, PFF. Thanks to him, Ben Raby, Britt Ciroli. That is your Beltway Blitz. A little later in the hour, want to get into a 30 for 30 ESPN's doing on one of their great anchors and one of the fun broadcasters of this era. But next, huge news in the NFC East today. We will take inventory on the division on Grant and Danny here on The Fan.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Alongside Danny Ruye, I'm Grant Paulson. This is The Fan. Some juicy NFL news today out of the NFC East, where the Eagles extended wide receiver DeVonta Smith through the 2028 season. Smith's been a bit of a commander killer over the last few years. He will get a three-year extension, according to Adam Schefter, worth about $75 million, guaranteed a little over $50 million. So math's pretty easy here, $25 million per, first couple of years guaranteed on the extension. What complicates it some is that they also simultaneously picked up his fifth-year option, which is going to pay him around $16 million in 2025. So really, it's a four-year extension or so, if you add that to the equation, for closer to like $95 million. He becomes the fifth receiver in the NFL, DeVonta Smith does, with a contract averaging $25 million or more per season. It doesn't actually average that, again, with the fifth year, but in terms of the three-year extension he got. So it's Tyreek Hill with Miami, DeVonta Adams with the Raiders, Cooper Kupp of the Rams, and then his teammate A.J. Brown in Philly. I wouldn't necessarily put Smith on that same list, but he's the first receiver to team up with a teammate in Eagles history to each get to 1,000 yards. They did that in 2022, and they're trying to get Jalen Hurts back on track to that MVP level this year. And if they're going to do that, then the 25-year-old DeVonta Smith, a former first-round pick who's got 3,100 yards and 19 touchdowns in three seasons, he's going to have to be a key in that, I think.
I have always loved him. I have always loved his game. I've always, you know, everybody always got mad. Mad's not the right word, but they didn't like what he wasn't, you know, because he's not 6'3", not 220 pounds, doesn't look like Terrell Owens or, you know, I don't know, your prototypical big receiver. But he, to me, is the best of the number twos. He would be like a mid-level number one, I think, for a lot of teams. Not like the truly elite guys. He's not as good as A.J. Brown, not as good as, you know, you could pick him. DeVonta Adams, Justin Jefferson, maybe Stephon Diggs if he's still right. A number of guys that you'd run through the list. But he's the perfect complementary receiver to me, right? The big play threat. He's smooth. He's a better route runner than he gets credit for. He's tougher than he gets credit for. He's actually been relatively healthy despite his small frame, which was one of the knocks on him why he lasted.
Yeah, that was the biggest question about him coming out.
I don't think he's missed a game, if memory serves. I have always loved his game, and he, of course, torments Washington. But, that signing makes sense to me, given where they are.
One game this season that he didn't play in. I don't know the specifics of it, but that was the only time in his entire NFL career that he has not been on the field. So your point is, he's been durable, and everyone said he wouldn't be able to be. But he does a good job avoiding contact. Mm-hmm. Doesn't necessarily work in the middle of the field a ton, but when he does, he's got that Marvin Harrison Sr. now ability to kind of, you know, be nifty and shifty with his body and get down on the ground.
Up, yeah.
He's smart, but he's also just exceptional. His 3 years, so he set the Eagles rookie record with 916 yards his first season on an offense that was bad, by the way, in 2021. Then when Hurts takes flight and plays like a top five quarterback in football in 22, he was one of the bell cows and right there smack dab in the middle of it, 95 catches for 1,190 yards. And then this past year, as A.J. Brown went on this crazy heater for a couple of months where he was the number one receiver in football, the numbers came down a little bit, but he still went 80 for 1,100, basically. He ended up with 1,066 on 81 catches, and his targets were down about 25, but still had 7 touchdowns. I'm with you. I think he is outstanding. He's one of the bigger pain-in-the-butt players to deal with in the division, which is as good a compliment as you could pay him. And the Eagles have major questions coming into the season, though, man. I mean, their second half last year was brutal. They collapsed in a lot of ways. They finished 11-6, which doesn't sound that bad, but there was really no reason for them not to win the division. Remember, they blew out their new coordinators now on both sides of the ball. Kellen Moore comes in on offense. Vic Fangio on defense. Nick Sirianni enters the season on, I won't call it a hot seat, but a warm seat after the fiasco that was the last six or so games of last season, and they did spend a bunch of money. They went out and they brought in Saquon Barkley at running back. They've added Devontae Parker to the wide receiver room. Paris Campbell, the former Giant and Colt, comes in as well on defense. They got the edge that I wanted Washington to sign, Bryce Huff coming over from the Jets. They brought in speedy linebacker Devin White, who is a terrific Pro Bowler with the Bucs. They retained C.J. Gardner-Johnson, who comes over now from Detroit, who's back via free agency and playing at strong safety. So it's hard not to like the offseason that they had, the splashes that they made. But I'll tell you, if they don't get off to a fast start, I wouldn't want to be Nick Sirianni.
Now, what's interesting is a team that loses the Super Bowl that doesn't have the same success the following year, that's very normal. A team dropping a couple of wins from year over year where guys had career years, that's, again, not that unusual. But how it happened, if you watched any of the ride, you know. Right after that bye week, they won at Kansas City. Didn't look great doing it. They kind of got away with the skin of their teeth there. Won a game against the Bills, I believe, in overtime. Again, really close. They probably should have lost the game. It did, but had that kind of Eagles magic thing that was sort of going on for them. And then it all came crashing down. San Francisco destroyed them. Dallas destroyed them. So in back-to-back weeks, I think they lost by 50-some points combined, right? It just looked terrible, couldn't get right. Then it was the offense that couldn't score. Then it was the defense that couldn't stop anybody. They limped down the stretch, barely beat the god-awful Giants for their only win in December, and they got destroyed in the postseason.
That was their only win all the way back to, like, week 13. They went 1-5 down the stretch last year as a team that had lost once as of week 13, and they only won one time the rest of the season. So, look, it sounds crazy because if you look at their win-loss record, the idea that Nick Sirianni would be in a little trouble after being in a Super Bowl, having double-digit wins, just seems ludicrous, and you'd say, oh, that's just Philly overreacting. But it actually makes sense.
It does.
There's no real good reason. Something was rotten.
That swoon is startling how bad it got. Yeah, right?
Like, it doesn't happen like that.
No.
Like, something has to be toxic, and they did clean house on the staff to an extent with the two new coordinators coming in. So that tells you that there was a lot of friction and butting heads behind the scenes.
Must have been. There must have been something else. I mean, it can't just be, you know, bad regression. You know, you enjoyed a bunch of good luck. Because remember, even last year, they were obviously very good. Got to the Super Bowl. I'm not taking away from them. They won a couple of games they shouldn't have won, right? Whether it was against Washington, when a couple of things had to go their way, if Rivera goes for two, maybe they win, maybe they don't. You know what I mean? But like, there's a couple times where they got away with it. They got away with that Kansas City game. It just sort of seemed, hey, well-coached team, they win some of these close games. You sort of give them the benefit of the doubt, right? Like the Vikings of a couple years ago kept winning these one-score games before ultimately losing in the postseason. But the way it went downhill and the bad vibes, this wasn't just a competitive team regressing. Like, you lose by a field goal at Seattle, okay, that's reasonable. Getting the doors blown off the way they did against Dallas, against San Francisco, losing at Arizona, who'd pretty much given up. You're going, and you know, I think the Giants beat them by 20 points in December. That doesn't look like a team that's going in the right direction. It looked like a team that was pulling apart, fighting each other, just a bad vibe there.
Looking at the odds to win the division going into the year, the Eagles and the Cowboys are tied atop the division at plus 125. And then you got the Giants and the Commanders who are tied at 9-1, plus 900. So you're still getting a 9-1 payout in either of those two teams, but a massive gap, which makes some sense between Dallas and Philly, New York and Washington, basically a couple of two-way ties in terms of the odds. Looking over at the Cowboys, they won 12 games and snuck in to win the division last year, but they have done basically nothing this offseason. And that's not like, oh, funny, they did nothing. I mean, literally, there aren't new faces. They haven't added talent. They're in a spot where they're up against it financially. They're trying to stack pennies and pay Dak Prescott. We found out today CeeDee Lamb's expecting not to show up for any of their organized work ahead of training camp because he wants a new deal. They're trying to pay him still. And then next year, they're going to have to pay Micah Parsons. So we were told, I don't remember which Cowboys beat reporter we had on at the start of free agency, previewing what would happen in the division, but they basically said they might add a couple of guys to help out a little bit, but their money right now is going to their three superstars, and that's kind of the blueprint and the plan moving forward. So if you look at it, the only guy that's probably going to start, depending on how competitions go in camp, that was not on the team last year that they added in free agency, is Eric Kendricks, who is the linebacker who played for the Vikings forever, and he spent 1 year with the Chargers last year. He's actually a Terp. played at Maryland, has had a really good career. But he is, I mean, I don't know how much football he's got left.
Mm-hmm.
He's long in the tooth. It's not his A game anymore. He comes in to help replace Leighton Vander Esch. But otherwise, it's the same group they've been trotting out there, basically, in terms of talent, minus, you know, a slew of guys that they lost in free agency, several of them coming here to Washington. And you're down your coordinator, Quinn, and you're down his top assistant, Joe Witt. I mean, so I don't know how a Cowboys fan can feel like they can replicate last year. I think the value on the Eagles to win the division, to me, being even with the Cowboys makes no sense. And it's actually worth pouncing on.
So that this Dallas team right now reminds me, and obviously I hate them and hope they lose every game, but it reminds me of the 2018 Capitals to a degree, right? Where even the GM, I think at one point said, Brian McCollum, was like, yeah, with the windows kind of closed or whatever, right? That they had open for all those years with this excellent team that never quite made it, and then they went on this run. They're worse on paper, and I'm hoping the results aren't the same, but they're worse on paper than they've been, but they still have a lot of really good ingredients. Right, they still have a bunch of players that you'd go, well, yeah, I'd love. And you mentioned some of these dudes, whether it's CeeDee Lamb, or you could do a lot worse than Dak Prescott, and you know, a couple of playmakers here and there on defense. They're not in a terrible spot, but you're right. On paper, they're just simply not as good as they were at this point last year.
He's Danny. I'm Grant. You're listening to The Fan. Why don't we finish up the division, right? We were talking about the two contenders. The Giants are not that by any means, but while we're just taking inventory on what's going on in the NFC East this year, we might as well acknowledge their offseason. Quietly, I think they've actually done some smart things. And outside of Washington, they made the most moves. That's generally what happens when you need to add talent. The big question for them is still quarterback, where Daniel Jones is coming back from an ACL. He played really well 2 years ago, played very badly last year and got hurt. Drew Locke's their new backup. Tommy DeVito, still around, will be their third quarterback. But they have three new starters on their offensive line as of right now going into the draft, including John Runyon, who came over from Green Bay. They're going to kick inside to guard. And then a starting left guard as well, Aaron Stinney, who they brought in from the Bucs. Defensively, their marquee move of the offseason might have been one of the biggest moves anybody's made, Danny, was the Brian Burns trade, where they gave him that mega contract after trading the world for him. So one of the best pass rushers in football comes over to join elite defensive tackle Dexter Lawrence. They signed Jordan Phillips from Buffalo, who's very good. That's one of the best D-lines in the league.
Yeah, all of a sudden. And that's been what the Giants' calling card has been. Maybe not the headlines and some of the names that Washington has had, but they've had a good defensive front there for a handful of years. Young star Kayvon Thibodeau, who has had some success against Washington, I will say. So now you've kind of got the bookend pass rushers, a couple good guys in the interior. That's kind of where their bread is going to be buttered here for a team that's in transition. The biggest story to me of their offseason is no Saquon Barkley. Everything and anything that had to do with New York and offense was Barkley for the last handful of seasons. He's gone now with the Eagles. I think I'm fascinated to see how this is going to go at this sort of crossroads they've got with Jones, this offense, and some of the playmakers that they still need to acquire.
I don't get why there's any thought that they shouldn't draft a wide receiver in 2 weeks. You know, 10 days from now, top 10 pick. I get that, you know, there's a reasonable take. Well, it'd be nice if you could get a quarterback and move on from Jones after this season. But you have to trade up probably to get one of the big four. So, yeah, if Penix or Nix is sitting there in the second round, I got no problem doing that if I'm a Giants fan. But at number six, I'm taking Malik Nabers from LSU. They don't have weapons. They don't have anyone that scares you. They didn't really play Jalin Hyatt that much last year until late in the season. He looks like he could be a nice little player, but I don't think he's a wide receiver one by any means. Darius Slayton and Wandell Robinson are still the guys their passing game goes through. Their additions at the receiving position were Isaiah McKenzie and Miles Boykin. I mean, that's who now is going to be getting targets. Like, it's been years. They haven't had one legitimate stud weapon in the passing game for Daniel Jones. They went and got Darren Waller, who's contemplating retirement still, I believe. And there's questions as to whether he'll play next year or not. But their tight end position's been a mess. Waller's given them next to nothing. They just need a weapon. So I will be shocked if they don't take a wideout. I think the idea that they're going to go get McCarthy or that he's in play for them, I think that the reeks of a smokescreen to me, and they just want one of those wide receivers.
I think they'd love all of it, but I think you're right. The opportunity may not be there. I do think they want quarterback. I just don't know how possible it is because you mentioned it. They're picking six, and if you want one, you're probably having to move up.
Yeah, if McCarthy's there, I could see them taking him, or if May or somehow fell, sure. But assuming those guys are both gone at five, which is what I think is going to happen, are they going up to get one? I don't think so. So just take a wideout and have your first star wide receiver since before Odell Beckham Jr. became a pain in the butt.
Yeah, seriously, it's been that long, and they have been devoid of it. It seems also at times they've been disinterested in finding one. That's the part I've been mystified by is there's, yeah, this will just sort of work itself out. You know, guys off the trash heap, fourth rounders, fifth rounders, just Jags everywhere. I've never thought much of Daniel Jones, but I do know that they never gave him a chance, really, with the receiving talent they trotted out there.
I got a guest tonight on the Altcast I want to tell you about next. I think you're going to be fired up about. Guy I've never talked to, but I think both of us would be excited to hang out with. So we will do that next. Also, a 30-for-30 doc being put together on Stuart Scott's career. And we'll dive into that on Grant and Danny here on The Fan.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and 3-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Oh, such a clutch pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
He shoots. He scores.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 45% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 45% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
G&D welcoming you back on 106.7 The Fan. Thank you for making the show part of our day. And your day means a lot. We appreciate it. I should also say, for those of you listening in Richmond, AM 910, FM 105.1, we appreciate you guys being along for the ride until 6 o'clock this evening. Part of 3 hours that we're with you in Richmond each and every day. You can also stream the program on the Odyssey app wherever you go. Take us with you. You run into a store, got to run some errands, pause, rewind, archive things. It's a really, really good way to listen to the program. So, Danny, I'm altcasting tonight. The Boston Bruins are in Washington to take on the Capitals. The Caps need a win. If they get 2 points tonight, they've got a really good chance, back up to almost 60% to get into the playoffs. It's actually way less complicated than that. If they win their final two games, they're in the playoffs. There's no way they wouldn't be. So it's a win and in. 24 hours starting at 7 o'clock for them tonight and tomorrow against the Bruins and the Flyers. But we're altcasting. I'm at Monumental. I'm wearing a T-shirt right now. I'm actually wearing the Cruz Wood 24 shirt.
Indeed.
That we have on our 106.7 The Fan merch shop. But I brought my dress clothes over here, so later in the show, if you want, you can help me pick out my outfit. I got a bunch of things hanging here.
I will, yeah.
So maybe we could do that. But tonight on the Altcast, we'll be joined by the head coach of the Hershey Bears, Todd Nelson. They won the title last year. They're obviously the best team in the AHL this year and the AAA affiliate, essentially, in the AHL for the Caps. So he coached a lot of the young guys that are on this team now. So I think that's a good guest spot. Also joining us tonight, John Bucci Gross, who is essentially
Whoa.
The face of ESPN's hockey coverage now, post Barry Melrose, the overtime challenge, the Bucci challenge, where you know everybody hashtags who they think's going to score the goal, has kind of gone viral over the years, and he's become synonymous with. But he's one of my favorite personalities at ESPN. He'll be joining us tonight on the Altcast to talk Caps Bruins. I'm excited about that.
Nice, dude. I like that a lot. That's cool. And who are the guys that are sitting in with you? You already said that.
So we've got Cup Hero, Devontae Smith-Pelly.
DSP.
You may be familiar with his work. Mm-hmm. Remember when he was on our show?
Yep.
For like three seasons in a row?
Yes.
And we did an interview with him at Kettler one time, and he showed us that he could pop out his tooth and put it right back in.
Yeah, like he was Ed Helms in The Hangover.
I've never stopped thinking about that. Like the first thing I think about with DSP is always that he won a Stanley Cup for Washington, D.C. by scoring seven goals in the playoffs mm-hmm. after a season where he scored seven goals all year. It was one of the great runs ever. He made me cry as a grown man, and I'll thank him for that until the end of time. But the second thing I always think about is how gross that was, where he's like, yeah, you know, if I'm going out or I need to look dressed up or nice, I'll put my tooth in. But, you know, if I'm just hanging with the boys.
In. Yeah.
You know, it's like if he was just playing in a hockey game, he'll just play without it. It's kind of a thing.
It's, again, we underrate that. Like, it's the way I would say, you know, like if I'm having a nice dinner, I'll put on a blazer. Or if I'm just hanging out with my buddies, just jeans and t-shirt, I'll put on a belt. I'll put my tooth in. Very different.
It's wacky.
So starkly different. It's unbelievable.
That's hockey players.
Yeah, when I think of DSP, I think of game-tying goal against the Vegas Golden Knights, where he's basically diving straight sideways, Gordie Howe style, right, to score it. I think of another, that checking line, like, could not stop scoring in a couple different games. But he had one, I think, that was huge to put him up big at home, and the crowd was, like, delirious beyond belief. But the point is there's so many goals to choose from during that Stanley Cup run because he scored seven. It was shades of John Drews, except it was, you know, on the way to an actual cup, which is just unbelievable. But that's the second thing I think of. Like, 1A is I have a tooth I could just take in and out. That makes one of us, dude.
Speaking of the Bucci Challenge and John Bucci Gross and kind of the face of hockey and a big personality at ESPN for so many years, there is a documentary being done. A 30 for 30 film is going to be done on Stuart Scott and presumably his importance to ESPN, but also how much he changed the game from a highlight reading standpoint. With all due respect to Scott Van Pelt, who I love and respect greatly, and who I would say is currently maybe the most popular person at ESPN who's a non-analyst, like as far as just broadcasters go, I would think he's the face of the operation. He's got his own sports center. They've kind of carved around him, and he broadcasts, I think, from our backyard here in the D.C. area rather than being in Connecticut. Stuart Scott, to me, was at a level that we haven't really seen anyone be at since. And maybe it's just because times have changed enough where it's impossible to, because I used to watch SportsCenter every morning to figure out who won and who scored and who didn't and, you know, what the loss meant for a team. And frankly, by the time I wake up in the morning and SportsCenter would be airing now, I know all those things. And so it's just a different era altogether. But when I was a kid, that's how I started my day every day before school, was Stuart Scott reading highlights, funnier than everybody else, with great analogies and similes and cliches and just things that I loved. Made me laugh like a rapper does, name-checking people and using pop culture. And there's never really been anybody like him since.
He was fantastic. So what he was, I was a little bit older when he came along. So, and this is not me, you know, speaking ill of a guy that was an absolute legend. His shtick wasn't as much for me. Like, the guys that I found unbelievable hilarious were the guys before him, the Craig Kilborns, the Dan Patricks, and Keith Olbermann back in the day, and Kenny Mayne. Those guys were like the mainstays to me, and Stuart Scott always had a, you know, whether it was a catchphrase or a turn of a phrase that I just kind of, it felt a little put on to me, but I know that guys younger than me, like all the kids that I coach, for example, that were freshmen and sophomores in high school, when I was in my 20s, like, loved him. Like, that was their dude, kind of, and they're that age group that you are and you would be, where he was their icon. He was their original gangster. Like, the first time you watch SportsCenter, there's a great chance Stuart Scott's there hooking you in.
Yeah, so Kilborn did a late-night show. That's how I know him.
Uh-huh.
You know, he was the guy
before Jon Stewart.
Exactly.
The original Daily Show. Yeah.
But, he had a cameo in, I'm trying to think of,
what is it?
You Old know School, it.
That's
right?
That's correct, yep.
Like, that's how I know him. And I know he was on SportsCenter, but mm-hmm. that predates me. The age-old, like, Dan Patrick Olbermann days, that's before me. So you're right. I think it's an age thing. Mm-hmm. Like Stuart Scott was the bee's knees when I was young watching. I think SportsCenter at its apex, because I think even those guys would admit whatever they did, and it was brilliant, it got bigger after that. And you can't say that, not because Stuart Scott passed or got sick or anything. It was just the way that sports were building, the era that they were in. That was kind of the mainstream years of, you know, that show as an entity being as powerful as it was before the landscape changed. But also, and this is specific to me, like I now am more cynical and get annoyed when I watch broadcasters recapping highlights and trying to be cute, or like play-by-play people who have to be over the top and, you know, say things that aren't part of the game to try to get a laugh. When I was that age, in the same way that a great line from a rapper, you know, got me, where you're comparing two things from different factions of life or whatever, and you're like, yep. Oh, what a great metaphor. I lived for that. I'm all about the analogy. And Stuart Scott, you know, cooler than the other side of the pillow and all those little lines. It was the golden era for that. And if I heard someone doing it now, I think I'd probably roll my eyes. Mm-hmm. But at that time, it was in. You know, cooler than a polar bear's toenail or, you know, whatever the little things are that
yep,
you hear now.
Little quips, yeah.
Now you hear that and you're like, ugh, God, that's terrible. But there was a time where the original people that did it before it got run into the ground did it really well. He was one of them.
And that's exactly right, because it was pushing the boundaries. Not the boundaries, but it sort of moved the medium forward, right? Because before then, the only highlights are your local news. You know, there were legends, and like in this market, Warner Wolf going to the videotape, and, you know, it's among so many others. But you think of like I'm trying to think of a great example. Like Rich Eisen, by the way, we forget he's been on NFL Network for so long. He was so charming, so funny, so good at kind of managing all the chaos playing point guard and giving the highlights in a really, really funny way. Like Kenny Mayne's dry shtick where he's like, that's 30 home runs, not in this one game, that'd be a record. Moving on from, you know, just just doing something different with a highlight. Everybody had their own personality to it. And now, again, we kind of have gone back to, we actually just want it straight. But you know what I mean? We've kind of come full circle in that way. But it was, nobody was doing that back in the day. Like when cable wasn't even ubiquitous yet, you couldn't get into that personality, and people were going nuts for it. It was must-see television at night. Again, because you didn't know who won and lost. It wasn't on your phone, right? That this hockey team win. Like tonight, if this was back in 1996 and the Caps needed this one and two other teams were playing, I'd have no idea until SportsCenter who won and who lost, and I'd be tuning in to find out, and those guys would deliver it to me.
He's Danny. I'm Grant. This is The Fan. Speaking of the Caps, John Walton joins us at 6:15 to preview their massive game tonight at home against Boston. But next, we're 10 days away from the draft. 10 questions. 10 days on the NFL draft. Kicks off on G&D.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.